text is that his master commended his dishonest steward because he had acted shrewdly. You guys want to go to church school? It'll be more fun than listening to me, I promise. Anybody here, you want to go to church school? Imagine being introduced to someone for the first time and your host saying, I would like you to meet my philandering minister. Or, I've been eager to introduce you to our lazy vice president. Or, join me in welcoming your duplicitous senator. And from that first meeting on, somehow everything you hear or observe about this person seems to confirm what your friend first told you about her. Before us is a parable that has been known as the parable of the dishonest steward. You have just been set up by Luke to see the worst in someone. First, listen to Jesus' parable with its title in mind, the dishonest steward. There was a rich man who had a manager, a steward, a person under his employ who had charge of overseeing his property. Charges were brought to the rich man that the steward had been squandering his property. Charges we assume are true because we've already been told he is dishonest. Had we instead been told that this was a parable about two men, or a parable about an owner and a trustworthy manager, we might find ourselves wondering about the reliability of the charges. Instead, either in italics above the story or in the footnotes below, we read parable of the dishonest steward. The honest owner is being taken by the dishonest manager, we think. This guy is a scoundrel, justifying the owner's cry, you are fired. The parable continues, and then characteristically gives us the inner thoughts of the steward. What will I do now that my manager is taking my position away from me? You listen to his plan and presume it is a scheme to save his crooked neck, reducing the debt owed the owner by the workers and thereby securing their grateful hospitality when he loses his job. Speaking for myself, it had never occurred to me to think otherwise of this steward. What if instead we took off the lens of honest or dishonest, those binary lenses, and put on the lens of powerful and powerless? How might we see these characters and through them see ourselves? If you bother to learn a little bit about first century agrarian society in Israel, you will discover that the steward belonged to a class of managers who escape those. 4 days after settlement, last Thursday, Wells announced that it would halt sales goals altogether beginning January 1. We don't want there to be any doubt on the part of our customers, the executive said, that our team members have their best interests at heart. Still, the bank is waiting a few months to implement the changes because it needs enough lead time to roll out the change correctly, she explained. Okay, clearly there are distinctions to be made between honest and dishonest dealings we have with one another, but also between who is the real dishonest character and who is the scapegoat. But because the bottom line for Jesus, if you think this is where the parable ends, is the admonition to be shrewd, mindful of eternal consequences, how you play the system, then I think Jesus is taking the complexity of our lives more seriously than we do. Like every character in the parable, we experience ourselves as both powerful and powerless. The vast majority of us in the sanctuary are or have been in middle management. Teachers who answer to principals as well as parents while daily trying to do right by students. Money managers needing to turn a profit for the company while making money for the client and the living. Sales reps who report to the head office while nurturing relationships with customers. Ministers who answer to congregations and to God. For the most part, we are participants in systems that we did not create and have very little say over reordering. When I think of our common life as a nation right now, the experience of powerlessness and the promise of being given power over our daily lot has everything to do with the candidate for whom many will vote. On a very mundane level, what I learned from the steward in this parable is that I am responsible for using the power I am given between birth and death, limited and tainted though it may be, with eternity in mind. Granting that his motives were mixed as all of our motives are mixed, the effect of his power over the debtors was to cancel their debt. A kingdom gesture, to be sure, that was probably an unintended consequence. As the scholar says, the result was a glimpse for the debtors of another order, one in which forgiveness of debt would be more than a petition in a prayer. Back to us here and now. How do you scheme as teachers, and I know that you do, to use the system or circumvent it so that your students are given a glimpse of the future in which they may be free to think and dream and create? How do you scheme as sales representatives in the midst of pursuing a bottom line? No doubt you are building lasting relationships with customers so that they buy more. And yet it is the relationship that gives meaning to your life, right? And creates the bond of trust over the years, a bond that gives you a glimpse of eternity and time. How do we as citizens exercise our little power within a corrupt social and political system as those who have eternity in mind? To be honest with you, I have no idea. All I know is that our teacher in these things is the one telling the story. The one on the way to the cross, where his death and resurrection will reveal the weakness of power and the power of weakness. Because God was about to use the death-dealing power of Roman crucifixion to defeat death once for all, Jesus tells us a parable about a steward working a corrupt system who inadvertently acts as an agent of God's debt-canceling law. Jesus tells this strange parable to give us eyes to see acted shrewdly with eternity.